Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll get an update from the Minnesota National Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion, learn about the Vietnam Veterans Roundtable, and get a report on the VA pension benefits from our County Veteran Service Officer. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
In 1914, a Blackfoot Indian named Red Fox James rode horseback across the country seeking approval for a day to honor American Indians. On December 14, 1915, he presented endorsements from 24 state governments at the White House, but despite his best efforts, a national day was never proclaimed. That changed in 1990 when President George H.W. Bush proclaimed November as National American Indian Heritage Month. Every year since 1994, Americans celebrate what is now known as Native American Heritage Month. As we recognize their vibrant culture, we must also remember the painful history they've endured. Despite centuries of forced assimilation and injustice, Native Americans held on to their traditions and languages. That kind of perseverance proved vital in World War II, when Native American code talkers helped turn the tides of battle by providing rapid and undecipherable communications using their various tribal languages. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in celebrating and remembering the invaluable contributions of Native Americans throughout the history of our nation.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the Minnesota Army National Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion, Lieutenant Colonel Ed Suarez. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me back, Tom.
Sir, I know you've been in the service for a few years now. Can you tell us how many? And
well, January, I'll be 30 years. That's combined service with both my National Guard time as well as some active duty time.
3 decades of service to our country.
Well, you put it that way. That sounds like a long time.
Well, thank you, sir, for your service. And we've got a little bit of a story that we need to tell. You are in charge of the Minnesota Army National Guard Recruiting and Retention Battalion, and you've got NCOs and people all over Minnesota recruiting or finding people that want to join the Minnesota Army National Guard. And the last time you were on, you told me that they were calling your house.
In fact, they did. In fact, they didn't know they were calling my house, but actually in that same time frame, they recruited my son, Antonio, who's currently down at Fort Benning, Georgia, just now finishing basic training.
And how's he doing, sir?
Fantastic. My wife had the pleasure to fly down there and see him last weekend, to see him firsthand, to see how he's transformed to a young man and full of vigor and energy, and he starts his advanced training this week.
And you found out that some of your NCOs were doing a pretty good job. Did they know they were calling your house, sir?
No, they didn't know until they realized the last thing Suarez was pretty unique, and they realized, my gosh, that's our boss's last name.
But nobody got in trouble for that one.
Oh, not at all. Oh, well, they put one in the win column. They got one extra recruit last year, so it worked for them.
Very good, sir. Talk about sacrificing to do your mission. How was the mission last year? It's my understanding that the Minnesota National Guard has been doing really well in recruiting for quite a few years.
We have. Last year, we celebrated 18 years of success. We recruit from 1 September to 30 August, so a 12-month recruiting year. And last year, we recruited 1,550 new soldiers into the Minnesota National Guard.
Now, are there about 12,000 soldiers in the Minnesota Army National Guard?
A little closer to 11. But that's about right.
So you've got to replace about 10% of those every year because people get out or they retire?
Well, people get out, they finish their initial enlistment, and try, you know, they move on to different, better things in their lives. And so, you know, on average, that number can fluctuate between, you know, 1,200 to 1,500, depending on the needs of the state.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
Big job, sir.
It is. It seems like it never ended. I've been in command for about 20 months, and I haven't stopped moving since I took command. So it's we're always busy.
Now, you've got one of the more interesting commands in that your recruiters are scattered all over Minnesota.
They are. In fact, last year we have had some unprecedented growth in the battalion. We've been given a lot of new authorizations as the total army is trying to get bigger. We've gained new recruiters authorizations, so my organization's growing. And so I have almost 100 recruiters out there doing their job every single day.
But you really only get a chance to bring them together a couple times a year, don't you?
We do. We bring them together in the middle of our recruiting year in March, and then we celebrate our victory in August.
So it's a little hard to keep track. Everybody's scattered all over the state.
It is, but I've got some great leaders in the organization, so we do get out there, and myself and the Command Sergeant Major McCoy, we get out there to talk to the recruiters and see how they're doing in the field.
So you're putting on a few miles, sir.
Yes, we do.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Ed Suarez, who is the commander of the Minnesota Army National Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, when we think about recruiting and replacing that many people, I'm sure that it's got to be a combination of you need enlisted people, you need officers, and in the Army, you need warrant officers.
That's correct. Now, we do have a dedicated enlistment mission, and we also have a dedicated officer and warrant officer mission. This year, we have to make 169 new officers and warrants in the National Guard.
So commissioned officers and warrant officers.
That's correct.
And I know, if I recall correctly, the warrant officers come from the NCO ranks.
They do, preferably at that staff sergeant level, as long as they have the proper prerequisites, you know, making high weight or physical fitness standards and certain level of education standards. If they meet the requirements, we're certainly interested in them pursuing a different career path in the warrant officer corps.
So for the warrant officer spots that you need to fill, you can either fill them from the Minnesota Army National Guard NCO Corps, or you can go and find some active duty Army folks that maybe are ready to get out and want to join the Guard.
Correct. We take all forms and we can get them, but we do make the majority within our own ranks.
That'd be the best. You know who they are and you know what they can do.
We do, exactly.
And warrant officers, for those that don't know, they get to stay in the same type of job for their duration that they're a warrant officer.
They are.
Some consistency?
Correct. Well, you know, they become the subject matter expert in their career field. And you pick the occupation, whether it's in the logistics arena or administrative arena, they're there for a reason. They can be very, very good at their job, technical experts in their field, and they stay in units for longer periods of time than most other officers or NCOs would.
And, of course, your officer corps, you'll get a job and you'll be in it for 2 or 3 years and then you move to the next job. And
correct.
You're promoted and you move to the next job and you keep learning as you move up.
We do. You know, it's interesting when I explain to my civilian counterparts why we do that. There's a lot of value in doing that. I mean, you move across organizations and you grow and mature as an officer.
So it's like cross training within the same.
Correct.
Within the Army National Guard, of course.
Exactly.
So where do you pull your commissioned officers from? Can they be civilians? Do they sometimes
they can.
Come from
We the... can. We can recruit them right off the street into the Federal Officer Candidate School program at Fort Benning, Georgia. That's one route. We can take them into the ROTC programs at the various universities across the state. And we also can use our existing soldiers currently serving, and they can serve and get their commission through the State Officer Candidate School at a Camp Ripley.
Now, sir, are there some special programs, like when you want to go out and recruit some doctors or some future doctors?
We have a dedicated specialty branch recruiter that is exactly that. We're looking for our lawyers and our nurses and chaplains, and we find them in professional environments. Many cases they come to us, but we do have a dedicated recruiter looking for those individuals to come into our organization.
And are there sometimes some funds available to help them finish medical school and those type of things?
Absolutely.
So those are probably the harder ones to recruit, and the ones where if you need them, you really have to get to
it. We do. You know, and I've gained a deep appreciation for those professionals in the medical profession because they do give up so much more of their time. They often have their own practices, you know, and those professions are very, very busy people. And so for them to take time to dedicate themselves to our cause and our mission, it means a lot to us.
Well, sir, we just got about a minute left here, but on the enlisted side, I understand there's some programs where if some people are in high school and between their junior and senior years, they can do some things early and then come
Precisely.
In.
No, the advantage of the National Guard, we actually offer a split training option where a junior during their summer year between junior and senior can go to basic training, complete the training, come back, finish their senior year of high school, and then upon graduation, that following summer will finish up their advanced training. So it's a great way of taking advantage of looking at a junior in their 17th year and providing them a unique opportunity.
Sir, I never thought about basic training as something that could be called summer camp, but that'd be a little different than going up to Camp Ripley on a summer camp, wouldn't it?
It's all about attitude.
Well, it's an incredible opportunity to embark on a career in the Minnesota Army National Guard, and you can learn an awful lot of things and actually be a part of a growing family on the military side.
Exactly. You sure can.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the specialties that you're looking for, especially in a program called the STEM program, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. We're speaking with Colonel Eduardo Suarez on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Lieutenant Colonel Ed Suarez, who is the commander of the Minnesota Army National Guard Recruiting and Retention Battalion. And, sir, I was looking at your website this morning, and there was a feature there talking about exploring future frontiers. Our modern age is defined by science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the National Guard is looking for future soldiers who specialize in those areas. You may be a scientist or an engineer seeking to serve, or you may be an amateur tech guru with an ambition to level up on military-grade networks. Sir, it would seem that in addition to the various, you need to get enlisted, you need to get warrant officers, you need to get commissioned officers, but there are job descriptions and job areas where they're a little more pressing and you probably need some people, and that would be science, technology, engineering, and mathematics?
Exactly. You know, we consider those kind of our, we call them low-density military occupational skills. These are these unique jobs with unique skill sets. We don't have a lot of those positions compared to your infantryman or your armor-type folks. These are unique special jobs for high schoolers and people who post-college who have a particular skill set that would fit one of those areas.
And, Colonel, technology seems to be speeding up faster and faster and faster every year. So setting up a secure mechanics so that the Minnesota Army National Guard can do what they need to do without being hijacked or hacked is pretty important.
Well, precisely. And one of the job skills we have is a cyber operations specialist. This falls under one of our technology careers. These individuals had to have the ability to, you know, perform or prevent cyber attacks and defend our cyber defenses. These are folks with unique skill sets that demonstrate that in their high school classes and college courses. And so these folks bring a great value to Minnesota. We have a brand new cyber protection team in Minnesota we're trying to stand up right now. And so we are looking for individuals who want to take on that new role.
And, sir, I know in my business, my personal practice, I've got an IT guy on the payroll, but he's there because he has to keep all the hardware and the software working and all of that stuff working. It's got to be true in the Army National Guard as well, where we rely on technology so much today.
Yeah, everything we do in the military has a technology component to it now.
So you need people to keep that going, too.
We do, absolutely.
So the rest of this, I think you refer to this program as STEM, which stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. Does that help provide the focus for your recruiters on what type of specialties or
you know it you does when these when these high schoolers, juniors and seniors take the entrance exam, we can take a look at their scoring, and based on their scoring we can determine already who has an aptitude or a skill set that might be best suited for one of these jobs. And so the recruiter will focus their attention understanding the needs of Minnesota and where these folks, these positions are across the state. And so it does help them focus their efforts and try to get these interested applicants to pursue one career path versus another.
So, sir, if you get one of our people from Minnesota, one of our good people that just graduated from high school, let's say, and they've got an aptitude in, say, technology, what's the process? The first thing they do is they go to basic training. Do you then send them to tech schools? Or
we will. And so each one of the different career fields and under technology, whether it's a cyber protection specialist, a communication sergeant, or a specialist, each one of them has a different, I guess, curriculum, if you want to call it that. There is a basic training set that you have to complete, and then following that, there's an advanced individual training that could be anywhere from 8 to 16 weeks, depending on the job they select.
And, of course, you've got a lot of different choices, anything from infantry to tanks to flying helicopters. There's all kinds of things you can do in the Army National Guard.
There is, and just each one has a different a required number of training weeks to get completed. And many of these things, when you're completed with the training, will provide certifications that are equivalent in the civilian sector as well.
So you can use that training, and it'll carry over, and you might be able to get a civilian job in that.
A primary example of that under a mathematics career path is the air traffic controller MOS. And those individuals will receive all their credentials when they finish that training. Not only can they do the job for the military, but they can do it in the civilian side as well.
So it'll help them get a full-time job, and then on the weekends they can come in and help you.
Well, that's the beauty of the STEM-related occupation skills, is because they have a civilian equivalency, so they can get a job in both their military and civilian life.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Ed Suarez, the commander of the Minnesota Army National Guard Recruiting and Retention Battalion, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I've got to ask you this question. There's probably some young men and women around Minnesota that are saying, I'd really like to join the Army National Guard and learn how to fly a helicopter. How would that work?
Well, it's really simple. I mean, most of these today's generations of students are tied into the internet. They just go to www.nationalguard.com/careers. They can find everything they need to know about the career options in the Minnesota Guard, and from there, had a link to one of our recruiters here in the state.
And, sir, we've had the commander of Camp Ripley on the show, on and off, the new commander, and Colonel St. Salver in the past, and he described that that facility as a small town. And he described the fact that in that small town, he had people in the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard that had to do everything that you'd have to do for a small town. So when you're trying to recruit in these careers, it's from everything from soup to nuts, isn't it?
It is. You know, and Camp Ripley is a great facility. We're fortunate to have it in Minnesota. There isn't a job skill that we have to offer that they can't exercise that skill, become proficient right here in the state of Minnesota at Camp Ripley.
And you've got, I think there's a new solar array up there to provide some electricity, and you're trying to become self-sufficient. Really, it's got to help your job to know that we've got a facility that's that, one of the top facilities in the United States, right here in Minnesota, that you can, our troops can go train at.
No, really proud of Camp Ripley and what it's done over the last couple of decades. You know, when I first came to the National Guard in 1993, you know, Camp Ripley today is nothing like it was back then. We have evolved, and the training facilities are just top-notch.
So, sir, if I had to ask you what are, like, the top three careers that you're trying to find, what would you say?
I would say right now we're looking for 88 mics or truck drivers, and we're looking for mechanics right now. It's one of our highest available positions we have in the state. I mean, we have some growth coming up in the next couple of years where these units are going to get larger, so there's a demand for truck drivers and mechanics.
Yeah, we had some of your soldiers on the show over the last couple of years, and they went out to the NTC, the National Training Center, and they told me that they had the train load, if it was one train, would have been 9 miles long, full of trucks and tanks and all of this equipment. And they had a great training exercise, did a good job. But all that equipment came back, and it all had to be reworked. The mechanics had to take a look at it. They had to get it ready for the next mission.
Yeah, maintenance is a big, big responsibility in terms of, you know, it's great to have the equipment and to use it, but you got to maintain it.
And if you can learn those skills in the Army National Guard, they'll carry over to your civilian career, which is what we've been talking about.
Absolutely.
Colonel, we just got a few minutes left. We've been talking the last time you were on about diversity. And in my understanding of what your goal is we want the Army National Guard to look like the people of Minnesota, whether they're Native American or whether they're Mexican or whether they're Caucasian, whatever they are. The state has all kinds of folks living here. And so diversity must be one of your focus areas as well.
It is. It's right there in my mission statement. You know, it's one of the things we focus on every single year. Our goal is to hit about 20% or better in terms of our race, ethnicity, and gender. And last year, we hit the mark. In fact, we exceeded all categories last year. And so our recruiters are out there trying to find the very best in all of our communities.
And if you're talking to a potential recruit, who's eligible and what kind of things make you ineligible to join?
You know, there's always a pre-screening discussion that happens between the recruiter and the applicant. And the first thing you want to know about is, you know, do you have any type of, moral, legal violation we should be aware of? Are there any major medical issues that could prevent you from being qualified in the military? And there's a subset of questions that every recruiter will ask an applicant just to kind of get that out of the way. And once that initial screening is done, then we'll sit down and have a dedicated, more in-depth conversation with the applicant or the applicant's parents as we kind of move through the process.
And then do some aptitude testing, see what
there's an aptitude test, exactly. And so there is a process, and it's a very deliberate process, and it's a very open process.
So for all of our listeners out there, if there's some young people thinking about joining the Minnesota Army National Guard, where do they go?
Same place, www.nationalguard.com. You can find a link to career opportunities there. It'll link directly back to the state here in Minnesota. Also, keep in mind we're still offering bonuses for select occupational skills, which changes about every 3 or 4 months. So check in with us, and we'll find you a great opportunity to serve.
Colonel, we got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I just want to thanks for the time today to spend time with you and your listeners. The National Guard is growing, and we continue to grow every single year. We're just looking to find the very best Minnesota has to offer. So one thing that makes us successful every day is our ability to access our high schools and talk to students there. So we appreciate principals, superintendents, and educators who allow us to come in and talk to their students.
Colonel, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you.
That was Colonel Ed Suarez, the commander of the Minnesota Army National Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion. For more information, please go to nationalguard.com/Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about the Vietnam Veterans Roundtable. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn all about the Vietnam Veterans Roundtable. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
The Minnesota Commander's Task Force, or CTF as we call it, is made up of 9 congressionally chartered veteran service organizations here in Minnesota. They include the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, the Marine Corps League, AMVETS, which is American Veterans, Jewish War Veterans, and Paralyzed Veterans of America. The Commander's Task Force acts as the single voice for the veterans of Minnesota. They meet regularly to discuss the issues affecting veterans and their families and facilitate communication among veteran service organizations. The CTF promotes legislative initiatives and represents veterans and their families on the Hill. The CTF is also an advisory board to me, and for that I am grateful. I look forward to working with the commanders in the upcoming year.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Randall Dietrich, who serves as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. Randall, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
It's nice to be here.
Randall, is it fair to address you or call you a historian?
It is.
Can you tell us a little bit about you spent your whole life studying history?
It would seem that way, wouldn't it? I spent more than a dozen years at the State Historical Society, looking at the World War II generation and developing a Greatest Generation project for them about a decade ago. Spent about a decade there, and then more recently with Twin Cities Public Television, looking at the Vietnam War.
And, of course, we're here today. We want to talk about a couple of things. First, the Minnesota Military Museum, and we're going to get to the Vietnam Veterans Roundtable, but for those of our listeners that may not be familiar, can you describe the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley?
Yeah, it's open to the public. We would love to have people come up and see it in Little Falls, actually on post at Camp Ripley. This time of year, we're open Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 10 to 4. There's extensive indoor exhibits that folks can come and check things out. Also, this year, we've opened a library, a lending library. The lending library features about 15,000 different titles that folks can check out and learn more about unit histories, about different campaigns, about individual memoirs and biographies of military men and women. So it's a fantastic new offering that we have this year. And again, it's free to use.
And I've been up there quite a few times, but it doesn't look from the outside like it's a very big building, but you can wander around in there for hours and read stuff and see stuff. Really fascinating items.
Well, thanks for mentioning it. I agree. Folks that do go in, once they start making their way through the labyrinth of displays there, they can be in there for hours. So go in, take a break, come back for more. Check out a book next door in the library.
Now, Randall, we just had Veterans Day this year, and it was the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of the World War I armistice. Mm-hmm. Did you do some special things up there for that?
We did. We did things, special things at Camp Ripley. We gave a presentation on November 8th, and then we've been really touring the state. We're in St. Cloud. We've been in Buffalo, and then most recently at the Veterans Day breakfast on Sunday morning. We spoke and had a large painting there we had commissioned through the State Historical Society, a 30-foot-long painting called World War I America, which features or depicts about 100 Americans, many of them soldiers, citizen soldiers, who were involved in the war and came back and really shaped modern America. And for young people, it's a great way to look at these faces and find familiar faces amongst ones they don't recognize and start conversations with young people and all people about the legacy of that war and how it did make, you know, modern America, this country that we know to now, know now. You can trace much of the origins back to that World War I era.
For our listeners out there who like to go up to the Brainerd area in the summertime and go fishing and stuff, if you get a rainy day,
yeah,
take your kids over to Camp Ripley.
Yep.
Go to the Minnesota Military Museum. You'll get them talking about things that they've never seen or dreamed of, from machine guns from World War I and World War II and uniforms and all those things. And Randall, a couple of years ago, I think it was a couple of years ago, we were up there. The Minnesota Military Museum opened up a special exhibit on the Vietnam War. And that's a fascinating room as well.
It is, and it's there, and it's filled with oral histories that were completed by the staff. Doug, Becky, and others spent years collecting all these oral histories. Now we can go into this dedicated room and read and hear stories of Vietnam veterans and what their experiences were. And that exhibit is still there, in addition to an exhibit that was also created more recently about World War I and the origins of the war and who fought in it and the Minnesota experience. So to your earlier comment, once you walk in the door, you can be in there for 20 minutes and you can be in there for 2 hours. Our staff loves visitors, so come in and say hello to myself and Ryan and Sandy and Diane and Doug.
Now, one of the things we wanted to talk about, we're speaking, by the way, with Randall Dietrich, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley on Minnesota Military Radio. One of the things that you wanted to talk about when you came in today, Randall, was the Vietnam Veterans Roundtable. Can you tell me, where did that idea come from, and is this an extension of the focus that you've really been putting on Vietnam veterans in recent years?
Yeah, there's been a number of different initiatives that different individuals and organizations have been working on. Certainly the Military Museum opened their exhibit about the Vietnam experience. Twin Cities Public Television with their Minnesota Remembers Vietnam initiative, which was pretty comprehensive over the course of the last year, developed a website where there's more than 1,000 stories at mnvietnam.org that you can read these stories, contribute your own stories, and the like. And what that got me to thinking was, rather than kind of these individual efforts that exist and then, you know, everybody kind of have to stop, it's time, I think, to offer the opportunity for Vietnam veterans to come together and hear from one another, to be on stage and share their story, to sit in the audience and simply listen, or for family members to join them and learn more from somebody who was actually there, you know, in the fight or in Vietnam, in country. And so the inspiration was to not have something that would be a one and done kind of thing. But this happens the third Monday of every month at Concordia University in St. Paul. And it's going to happen throughout the rest of this year and for years to come.
Randall, we're going to take a short break in a couple of minutes, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Vietnam War Roundtable and some of the topics we're bringing up. But first, before we go, I want to make sure that we talk about a Minnesota hero that we lost in the last couple of years, and that was General Jack Vesey, who was the 10th chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He joined the Minnesota Army National Guard when I think he was like 17. Yeah. He served 46 years. And he was just a national treasure, just a wonderful man. We had him on the show a few times. I understand that you're working with General Rick Nash, who recently retired as the Adjutant General, and you're putting some things together about Jack Vesey.
Well, it's an awesome responsibility that we've been given. The Vesey family had donated the items of Jack's to us to care for in perpetuity. So we're in the process of cataloging all of those materials, and Rick Nash and others have helped us go through the boxes of materials that you could appreciate somebody of the general's standing, Vesey's standing would acquire over all those years. And so now we're in the process of cataloging all of that, making those materials available to other organizations nationwide. The new headquarters that's being developed for the 34th is going to have a Vesey area and a Vesey library there. So we're in the process of cataloging all of those materials. And it is, like I mentioned, just an awesome responsibility given the stature of that man and how he served the state and the country and the world for that matter.
Really incredible to think back and think that he started as an enlisted man, E1, and worked his way all the way up through to be a four-star general, fought his way through World War II, South Africa, up into Europe, an incredible man and like I said, a national treasure. And I know from being on the air for 8 years now that when General Nash was the Adjutant General, he and General Vesey were quite close. So General Nash stepping up to help you catalog those things and work. What a great opportunity and even another reason to get over to the Minnesota Military Museum this winter or next summer.
Absolutely. Yeah, just to hold those documents in your hands of correspondence going back and forth between, you know, General Vesey and the president, other leaders, heads of state, other generals that we all recognize, that to have those documents in our care is something that we take really seriously.
That's going to be fun to see some of that. Randall, we have to take a short break. As I said, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Vietnam War Roundtable, where it's going to be held, some of the dates and some of the topics. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Randall Dietrich, who serves as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. Don't miss that. If you haven't been up there, their hours in the wintertime are Thursday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And next summer, if you get a rainy day while you're up at the cabin, get over to Camp Ripley. Just tell the guards at the gate you want to take your children and your grandchildren to the Minnesota Military Museum. Now, Randall, we got a few minutes. We need to focus on Vietnam War Roundtable. What is it and where is it going to be? And then we'll start running through some of the dates.
Sure. Well, much of your audience is probably familiar with the Harold C. Deutsch World War II Roundtable that's meeting at Fort Snelling for 30 years and has a tremendous following. And that was part of the inspiration in doing this Vietnam War Roundtable in the Twin Cities and modeled after that same format, where it's the third Monday of every month, September through May, so throughout the academic year, third Monday every month at Concordia University in St. Paul, which is just off of Highway 94 in Hamlin, 300 Hamlin Avenue to be exact. To do these kinds of programs, my experience over the years, you have to have a couple things. You have to have ample free parking. We have that. You need to offer a free program. We do that. And then you need to have tremendous content to make the time you do spend at this roundtable well spent. And I think we have all three of those things. So it happens at Concordia University in St. Paul. They've been a tremendous partner of ours. They're actually the organization that did the oral history on John Vesey about 4 or 5 years ago. And so they've come on and become one of our partners helping to host this program. And then Twin Cities Public Television is also a great promotional partner helping us spread the word to their audience about this free opportunity.
Information can be found at mnvietnam.org/roundtable. That's mnvietnam.org/roundtable. And Randall, you've already had a few of these.
We have. We started in September. And again, every single third Monday of the month, there's one coming up November 19th, Monday, November 19th. In this case, we're talking to or partnering with the Humanities Center that's been having their Veteran Voices Award for a number of years now. And we want to have a couple of those folks come in to our auditorium, sit down and really tell their story in detail. So it's an opportunity to hear from them in greater detail than you might have had a chance to in the past.
Well, I'm glad to see that you've got some younger ones. They call them on the rise, 40 or younger, and the legacy. Yeah. I happen to be one of those legacy members, so you got to get the old guys on there once in a while, right?
You do.
Especially if you want to hear firsthand stories about Vietnam or, yeah, or from Vietnam. Tell us about some of the other topics coming up.
Yeah, and then again, we try to, the idea is that we're going to do this year after year. So there's always the sensation when you're trying to schedule a full year that you want to get all the stories told. And that's, you know, you can't do that with the Vietnam experience. But you can do it if you make a commitment to do this year after year after year. And so we've been able to identify who's available, when are they available, and in the process of doing that, we're able to have a good naval story in January. In February, one of our efforts in telling these stories and having this roundtable is to have a more complete picture of the Vietnam experience, both in country over there and what was happening here domestically. So in February, we look at the war kind of from all different points of view. In March, we're going to hear from the women nurses in Vietnam. April 15th, we're going to hear from Don Shelby, who, of course, is a Vietnam veteran himself and looking at reporting on the war and the impact that had, again, in Vietnam and here at home. And then we wrap up this first year of the Vietnam Roundtable on May 20th, looking at the Battle of Sui Tre, which ties us back to
General Vesey.
General Vesey. So that's the start for this year, and there's more to come. But really, the important message in here is that this is a roundtable for veterans and their families and students to come together. We've tried to create a place for them to do that, for us to do that, but really, the more that people get involved and create kind of that groundswell of interest and attendance, good things happen when people can come together. And we've tried to make a way for people to do that.
Well, once again, more information can be found at mnvietnam.org/roundtable. And Randall, you forgot the Marines in December. And of course, you've got the Navy in January, women nurses in March, and that May 20th, the Battle of Suitre. We had General Vesey in the studio, and he told us the story of that battle. Don't miss that. It is incredible. And what he had to do to save his troops there was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then there's a story about he and the commander of the other side met after the war when they were tracking down, trying to find the MIAs and KIAs. So you're going to have a good time, I think, with the Vietnam War Roundtable. Once more, information at mnvietnam.org/roundtable. Randall, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
It was Randall Dietrich, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. And don't forget Vietnam War Roundtable, mnvietnam.org/roundtable. Joining me now is Robbie Robinson, who is the Goodhue County Veteran Service Officer and also the president of the Minnesota Association of Veteran Service Officers. Robbie, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Robbie, I don't know what happened to us, but we're just about here at Thanksgiving. I don't know where the year went. I hope you had a good year down there taking care of all your veterans in Goodhue County.
Yeah, it's been a real good year. It's been a busy year, and I have a feeling there'll be more to come.
Well, I'm sure you've got plenty of veterans down there, so they'll be coming in every day, and wish them all a happy holiday for me.
I will do that.
Now, today we want to talk about VA pension benefits. Can you tell me, what is a VA pension?
Well, Tom, a VA pension is benefits provided tax-free. It's monthly payments to wartime veterans with limited or no income. They have to meet certain age or disability requirements. And survivors of wartime veterans may also qualify for a VA pension.
So what are the eligibility requirements for a veteran's pension?
Well, if you're a wartime veteran who meets certain age or disability requirements and your income and net worth are within certain limits, you may qualify for monthly payments through the Veterans Pension Program. But there are some caveats there, both of these things must be true. You didn't receive a dishonorable discharge, and your yearly family income and net worth meet certain limits set by Congress. Your net worth includes all personal property you own, except for your house, your car, and most home furnishings, minus any debt you owe, and your net worth includes the net worth of your spouse also.
So those are conditions in order to get preliminary eligibility.
Right. And at least one of these must be true about your service. You have to have started active duty before September the 8th, 1980, and you served at least 90 days on active duty with at least one day being during a wartime period, or started active duty as an enlisted person after September the 7th, 1980, and served at least 24 months, or the full period for which you were called to active duty for, with some exceptions, with at least one day being during wartime. Or you have to be an officer and started active duty after October the 16th, 1981, and served for 24 months.
A lot of conditions here. What else? Are there other conditions?
Yep, there's some more. At least one of these must be true. You've got to be at least 65 years old, have a permanent disability or total disability. If you're a patient in a nursing home for long-term care because of a disability, or you're getting Social Security disability insurance or supplemental security income.
Now, are there some separate requirements for a surviving spouse to be eligible for a survivor's pension?
Well, a lot of them are the same, but here's some of the ones for survivor's pension. To be able to get the benefit, the survivor can't have remarried after the veteran's death. If the deceased veteran didn't receive a dishonorable discharge, and if the veteran service meets at least one of the requirements below, then the survivor will be eligible. The big thing is serving one day during active duty during a wartime period.
So a lot of the same requirements, and this one, VA pension benefit, sounds like there's a lot of conditions, but this program is meant to take care of some of our veterans and their survivors that can least afford to take care of themselves. So once again, if anyone's interested in finding out if they're eligible for a VA pension, go visit your local county veteran service officer and sit down and have a chat.
Yep. That's true. With there's been a lot of recent changes in the pension benefit by the VA, and there's many Health and Human Service departments around the state that require a veteran or surviving spouse to apply for veterans benefits before applying for state benefits. And I know there's a question on a lot of the applications that ask if the surviving spouse or the veteran is eligible for veterans benefits.
So to check in on this or any other benefits that you might be eligible for, go see your county veteran service officer. They'll be happy to help you.
Yep. We are your boots on the ground or the front line local representatives to assist veterans and their survivors obtain the benefits they may be eligible for.
Thanks again, Robbie.
Not a problem. I'm glad to do it. And I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And we'll talk at you next month.
Thank you, sir. That was Robbie Robinson, the Goodhue County Veteran Service Officer, talking to us today about VA pension benefits. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant Colonel Ed Suarez, Randall Dietrich, Robbie Robinson, Commissioner Larry Shelleto of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we visit with a very special World War II Marine veteran and see what our Minnesota AMVETs are doing for the holidays. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.